Hello and welcome to the What's Your Problem podcast. I'm Amy Bull, your host, and with me today is Gemma Downing-Mapp from Mixos Group. So today we're going to be finding out exactly what Gemma's problem is. Welcome, Gemma.
Thanks, Amy.
You're very welcome. Happy to have you on the pod.
Yeah, great to be here.
So for those of people that don't know who you are and who Mixos Group are, why don't you give us a short introduction?
Sure. So I'm Gemma Downing-Mapp, as you said, co-owner of Mixos Group. And we're a local recruitment consultancy which supports businesses all over Milton Keynes, Luton and Bedford, taking their vision to reality as such and finding them top talent in the local market.
I mean, that all sounds fabulous. You've said that quite a few times, haven't you?
Absolutely.
So how old is Mixos Group?
So we are actually 6 years old, but I've only been in business with Chris for 4 years.
Okay.
There's a bit of a story behind that.
Okay. Well, why don't you give us a bit more info on the story behind it?
Of course. Do you want me to go right back to the start?
Yeah. Let's think about recruitment's quite an interesting business to be in. It's certainly changed over the years. Introduction of AI, introduction of ATS systems, introduction of all sorts of technology. But people don't change, in my opinion. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see from your opinion where you maybe first started out and what made you get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I am a massive believer in every part of your backdrop and your beginnings plays out into where you end up, right? So at school, I wouldn't say I loved school. I probably hated it a little bit. Wasn't particularly academic, was very bright, had like oozed common sense, was very streetwise, was likable, but I just didn't listen well or maybe didn't retain well. And unfortunately, there's kind of a one size fits all in, you know, kind of main state schooling. So there was always a little bit of no hope there for me, but I had such a big passion for singing, dancing and acting. And so became obsessed about it to the degree if there was 8 days in a week, I would literally be singing, dancing and acting 8 days a week. And that was really where my discipline kicked in and that ability to drown out the noise and hyperfixate on something that I loved. And I think I knew from then, whatever it was I did in the future, I knew I'd do it well because I just had this ability to, it sounds really cringe, but my friends would say to me when we were younger, "Oh, Gemma, the sheep, she's not a sheep, she's a shepherd." And I'm like, oh, stop mugging me off, guys. But I just was able to not, I didn't like conforming. I didn't want to follow the grain as such. So when we were coming to the options side of things at school, there wasn't a lot of direction, but fortunately I knew I never had a fallback or a plan B, but it was, I'm going to study at the Italia Conti Theatre Arts, which is quite a highly acclaimed school in London. I didn't know how it was going to go, how I was going to get there, but I just knew. So I auditioned, I managed to get in, fortunately. And unfortunately, my parents couldn't afford to send me because it was between $3,000 and $4,000 a term. So it was very steep. And so I wrote a letter to try and get some funding. I'd never written a letter in my life. It was quite funny. Wrote it, sent it out time and time again and just got no after no after no after no, which is pretty demoralizing for most. But I just kept on going. And eventually I got my yes and I got funding. I got a full scholarship, in fact, for three years to train at Italia Conti from Italia Conti themselves, which is like 1%. So I was absolutely buzzing about that. And I very quickly grew up. I lived in Luton. So, I mean, you don't get more diverse than that. So I was very streetwise from that. I was walking in the morning, 40 minutes from my house to the train station in Luton, jumping on a train to London and doing that 5 days a week. I chose not to live in London. I still am a real family girl. I wanted to be at home with my family. With that, I was then juggling three jobs. I kind of liked it. I was like mad for it. I had a job in a cocktail bar. I had when I was old enough, of course. And then I had a job in a sports shop and I was also singing. So I was gigging. And now absolutely can't stand ABBA because I was in an ABBA tribute band. I was a Britney Spears tribute artist and I was in an ABBA tribute band. But I was earning some immense money at the age of like 17, 18. And I loved it. I loved the freedom. I loved the independence. On my 18th birthday, everyone was going out and getting lashed. And I sung in a golf club with lots of older, well-to-do people. And I earned off the back of it money that for me at that time was life-changing. And it meant I could have the freedom to go where I wanted, when I wanted, and do what I wanted. So I quite quickly come to the realization that this kind of entrepreneurship flair, not wanting to conform, you know, doing my thing, it was there in abundance. It was mm-hmm. just how do I get it out? How do I project it? So may I add, being at Italia Conti was dog eat dog. It wasn't all rainbows. It was tough.
So it wasn't like we see on Glee or any of those other TV shows.
Honestly, it's the right eye colour, hair colour, weight, length of hair. It's brutal. Mm-hmm. It really is brutal. And there's some great talent, and there's also lots of people that come from wealth. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I found that a challenge, and I thought, I'm doing something really good on the side of this, and I've got some great skills to take away from this, but actually I don't want to do this forever. I know it's got a shelf life, especially in dancing, mm-hmm. with injuries and with age and things like that. You know, you can't, that's not a forever mm-hmm. kind of career. So I come out of that, didn't have a Scooby how to write a CV, and it's quite uncanny given the industry that I'm in now. My dad absolutely rips me for it even to this day. He helped me craft a CV, and I went the roughest street in Luton. I went into a recruitment agency and just said, help, I don't really know where to start, but I know I've got a lot to give. And that was the moment that transformed the rest of my life, because I used to say I fell into recruitment, but I'm going to own it. I chose to be in recruitment. I ended up interviewing the person that was interviewing me. So that curiosity has got me to where I am today. And I think it's one of the biggest traits of a good recruiter is having the curiosity to be interested mm-hmm. and be interesting, like genuinely interested in other people. Mm-hmm. And you can bash out cold sales all day long, but it's that degree of having a sit down face to face, being genuinely interested, not even talking about business for maybe an hour mm-hmm. or meeting someone in a networking event, mm-hmm. you know, and just striking up conversation based on, what do you do? What do you like? What do your children do? You know, just making that real good, genuine small talk with someone.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about that tenacity that you need in your industry, would you say that going to the Italia Conti school helped you with that tenacity
yeah.
to understand that just because you're getting a no doesn't mean it's a no never, yeah. it means no right now?
Absolutely, yeah. I think every no and every failure took me one step closer to where I needed and wanted to be. And I just had this thick skin. There wasn't a lot that was going to deter me. I picked myself back up and brushed myself off. You know, there were times when I was like, oh my God, am I just getting myself back up again today? But mm-hmm. that's recruitment. That is mm-hmm. recruitment. And also that's owning your own business. No mm-hmm. one's coming to save you. It's on you.
Mm-hmm. So you start in the industry.
Yeah.
And you're on a desk.
Yeah. So I started in perm recruitment. Mm-hmm. I worked for the second largest recruiter in the UK, actually, in Pelham Group, mm-hmm. and had some really good grounding, had a really good start with them. I excelled. I remember my financial director saying, Gemma, if you exceed your target, I'll buy you some Chanel shoes. And back then I was 19. I was like, I don't really know what Chanel shoes are.
But they sound cool, yeah, right?
They sound cool. I was like, I know what Gucci is. Like, make it Gucci and we've got a deal. So, like, literally. And now I couldn't be further from that. But he was like, okay, cool. I was like, you've basically made a deal with the wrong girl, because I just went crazy, smashed it out the park. And he took me to Selfridges to buy them. And then I bought myself the matching bag. And I thought, the fact that I was able to go as a young, independent woman and just get myself something of that value just said to me, it's not about the monetary value. It's not about mm-hmm. the aesthetic purpose of the bag. It's about me creating my own wealth, my own freedom, and how that could look like in 10 years' time. So I just excelled to top performing perm consultant. And then I thought, what next? I've got that brain. Like, what next? What next? I've achieved that, but I need more. So I went over and did temporaries division. And I thought, let's learn every nut and bolt of this business and of recruitment and how it works, how it functions, how other businesses work, and just mop it all up. So I went over to temp division and I worked in Hemel Hempstead, and I exceeded the London City office and put our temp desk on the map, basically. Mm-hmm. And no one's ever achieved more than the London City office in my old branch. So mm-hmm. little old Hemel Hempstead put them way up on the map, which was wicked. And then I again thought, like, what's next? What do I want? So an opportunity come up in Milton Keynes to basically run the office and mm-hmm. ops manager role. I knew loads about recruitment. I didn't know how to deal with people. I knew nothing about P&Ls, but I just thought, put your hand up, go for it. And I interviewed and I thought, God, where the hell is this going to go? got the job and I inherited a team of not so great people at the time. They weren't in the right seat. So I was really bold and started a scratch, literally me and one other person supporting me with admin. And I built my team up to what I knew were good people, culturally mm-hmm. the right fit, people that would work hard, but people that I knew were high performers that would get results. And then, yeah, that was just from there on, Milton Keynes was just thriving, an absolute thriving office. I had the great news that I was having a little boy, went off, and I did some little entrepreneurial things while I was off on mat leave. Mm-hmm. I took a qualification in a fitness qualification in Bounce Fitness, bought a franchise, because when I went back to work, I said to my regional director, there's a few things that happened that didn't sit right with me mm-hmm. around flexible working. Okay. And that chose me to make the decision. I always knew when I was 19, I said I'd have my own business. I didn't really know in what mm-hmm. and when and how it would happen, but I just believed that I would. So I went back to work and a few things happened that ruffled my feathers. And I thought, you know what? I've had a really good run in here. I've had 11 years. I'm very loyal. I've learned so much. I'm ready. Now's the time. And I was 29, I think, mm-hmm. 29, 30. And I pitched the idea to my regional director, who is a very good friend of mine then, and she still is now. I said, why don't we leave together and set up? And she was like, very, very settled in every way, shape and form, very settled home life, husband, everything. Meanwhile, I was going through a divorce at the time. Mm-hmm. And my dad had leukemia and mm-hmm. Was going through chemo. And my mum was urging me, like, what are you doing? You know, don't be a single mum with a 2-year-old and start a business. You're actually crazy. And I was like, mum, I respect and hear what you're saying, but I've just unheard what you're saying kind of thing. And for me, I just need to keep focused and I know that I can do this. So pitched the idea to Bianca and we set up Throstle Down in recruitment, had an incredible, I think it was 2.5-3 years in the end, mm-hmm. far exceeded our own expectations. And it was going brilliantly, but it was a lifestyle business. And I had a different outcome. You know, my end goal, I'm very ambitious. Mm-hmm. My vision was wild. It was so wacky. Meanwhile, Chris and I started dating. I hate that word. It makes me sound like I'm 16. But we started dating and he was working for someone else. Also, mm-hmm. Chris's background is in recruitment. Mm-hmm. So I said, why don't you set up your own business? Like, agreement between us. Let's mm-hmm. keep to our own territory. Let's not mm-hmm. step on each other's toes. And I helped him set up his business and his branding and all of those bits that you do in the beginning when you just need a soundboard. And it was him on his own. Never did I ever kind of have a desire that we would go into business together. And then he had a fairly good start. He'd made a few hires that perhaps didn't work out. Mm-hmm. Found it very lonely. His was also a lifestyle business. And we were just chatting one day on a sunbed in Mallorca. He reminds me of this all the time and he's very cheeky and he keep making these, like, oh, if me and you were in business together, I'm like, look, stop saying it. If you mean it, let's sit down and talk. And we did. And the rest was history. We are actually between us very crazy because we went into a pandemic and I sold my shares and gave up my directorship and we were in a global pandemic. So I think, you know, when people say it's never a good time, you'll never find a good time. You don't get worse than being a single parent, going through a divorce, which can be messy. Your dad is having leukemia. You've left your business partner. Mm-hmm. But all of it I did with grace and with elegance. And I'm still like best friends with my old business partner now, which is super unheard of. I co-parent my little boy incredibly well with his dad. You know, mm-hmm. we've got, I'm all about relationships and not burning bridges and mm-hmm. just being good. Like when you're good to people, it returns to you. So then Chris and I joined forces and the last 4 years have been insane. It's been crazy.
And I think that that's a really good point to pick up on is that it's never a good time.
Never.
It's never a good time to start a business. You can think about, I need to have the money. I need to have the premises. I need to have the right people. I need to have a business partner. Mm-hmm. I need this. I need this. I need this. But actually, sometimes you can just start with an idea. And I don't know whether you feel the same, but I think now is easier in a lot of ways to start with an idea,
yeah,
because you can crowdsource, you can get feedback immediately,
yeah,
from the internet. So absolutely. LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, yeah, whatever, you can immediately get feedback, not just from your friends and family, but from people you've never met before.
Yeah. I think with that as well, when we went into business together, we didn't even own a property. We were renting, and I was just so blasé about it. I mm-hmm. just thought, you know what? There's never going to be a right time to do it. We went into the pandemic, so we kind of switched our niche just for a short period of time. We pivoted into construction because that really was the only area mm-hmm. that was hiring. Yeah. I just made sure that I could cover myself for 6 months. You know, I knew there was no way we'd be making any money.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to get out a 40K bounce back loan. We had hired, Chris's brother already worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a mortgage. Imagine that. Imagine paying someone else's mortgage. You know, don't even own your own house.
Mm-hmm.
It was ludicrous. Mm-hmm. But those are things you do. No one would ever know that on the outside because everyone kind of thinks, oh, it's okay for you to. They see the glitz and the glam. And, you know, social media to a degree can be a bit of a false illusion.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't see the hardship behind the scenes, the fact that you have got out this loan and you don't even own your own house and mm-hmm. you're literally having to pivot into a different industry yep. that you don't know anything about.
How did that feel for you needing to owe that much money or to borrow that much money? Did you have faith that you were going to get it back? I'm assuming you did, but at the time, how did that make you feel?
So I'm a very calculated risk taker. Chris and I balance quite well because he is idea straight to market, whereas I'm idea, let me sleep on it, reflect, and 90% of the time I will take calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, like growing up, I've never even owned a credit card. My dad is really, really sensible with money. I don't come from much, you know, my family are just very working class. Mm-hmm. Neither of them were like in business, but they worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
So they taught me the work ethics and they taught me not to give up.
Mm-hmm.
But with regards to money, my dad taught me well with saving and he's quite old school around, you know, like the traditional. So some of the stuff that I feel that we should be taught at school, I was lucky enough to be taught it by my dad. Perhaps not to the degree of investment and mortgages and things, but more from the side of don't live outside of your means, basically,
mm-hmm.
and don't get excited with credit cards and things like this. So mm-hmm. I'd always lived within my means. So to get a bounce back loan was really alien.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, felt like one of the riskiest things I've ever done.
Yep.
So just having that weight hanging over me, I didn't like the thought of it, but I knew to trust the process and that
mm-hmm.
you do the right things. So when I walked away from my recruitment business, I walked away with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And most people would fight over, well, you know, I've done all of the groundwork and the door knocking and the sales calling.
The sweat equity. All of this,
and Bianca was an incredible recruiter, which is so ironic because she was so strategic mm-hmm. in our old business. So for her, it was a new, exciting concept.
Mm.
And so I was really happy to just go and do all the kind of donkey work and the sales calling because I get a buzz out of that. I love mm-hmm. it. I'm a salesperson, but I do it with just genuine relationship building. Mm-hmm. So it worked super well. And I didn't want to take anything. I just wanted to leave amicably and mm-hmm. have a, and maintain our friendship. Because of that, she said, let's split the database 50-50, which is so unheard of, is amazing.
That is a very unusual,
really unusual
attitude to have.
Indeed.
And to still be friendly
yeah.
or on friendly terms with her now.
But my view is there's enough business out there, isn't there? Mm-hmm. You don't need to be.
For sure.
And a lot of people in my industry are very, I don't know, very like this. They keep things close. They don't want to share good news or an idea or a concept that they're doing really well. And I'm thinking, but Mix us are here to try and raise a bar in our industry. So the more we can share good practice and things that we're doing that are working really well, the best that is for our industry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because of that, I was very fearful of getting into a position where, you know, I knew I could carry myself.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that. But then to take out a loan to pay someone else's mortgage and put food on the table for someone else's family was like, wow, this is next level stress.
Yep.
And so no one sees that behind the scenes of a startup mm-hmm. when you start employing people, just thinking about when your next invoice is going to be paid and is it going to be paid before all of your staff are due to be paid. And you know, you always think, I'll put myself last. I need to pay my staff first.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we're not in that position now.
Yeah.
But I'm talking the first year to 2 years. No one sees that side of it. Mm-hmm. That blood, sweat and tears, the sleepless nights, the worrying about how you're juggling your, you know, what's coming in versus what's going out. And we, I know we're going to talk about numbers and stuff soon.
But it's things like, I don't know, waste management. So who's collecting your bins from your building that you're renting? And the building that you're renting, is the landlord committing to it actually doing what they said they were going to do in terms of looking after it and cleaning and what have you?
Yep.
You know, how do we keep the lights on? And in those first couple of years, you've got to be prepared to make sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And it's not just monetary sacrifices. So it's not just not getting the Gucci shoes and the matching handbag from Selfridges.
Yeah.
Because actually rewarding your team with things like that make loyalty
absolutely
much stronger, much quicker than saying I'm going to give you a 10 grand pay rise. Everyone says lovely, thanks very much, but in reality it's listening to people and saying, okay, I can help you in this way, I can see what's motivating you, I can see, you know, kind of this is what you want or this is what you need.
Interestingly, what motivates recruiters these days is so different.
Okay, tell me about that.
That's been a huge, I'd say that's been one of the biggest learning curves for Chris and I, is like, Chris is very similar to myself. He was a world champion BMX, like European BMX mm-hmm. racer, and like very competitive, a bit like me, very competitive, mm-hmm. but self-motivating mm-hmm. discipline just comes from with you. Mm-hmm. So we have found it really hard as we've been scaling, like, why do we want it more than them?
Mm-hmm.
Why can they not see the opportunity in front of them?
Mm-hmm.
Why are their work ethics
different?
to put it bluntly. But I just think people's outlook has changed. There's now five mm-hmm. generations in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what suits one isn't what suits another.
Mm-hmm.
And back then it was all, and there are still organisations out there now that reward free Rolex watches and, you mm-hmm. know, is the typical recruitment going away for the weekend mm-hmm. and alcohol involved. But actually, do you know what? Our team are far from that. And I think us finding offices in Evershot is attracting the right people anyway, because there are people that, they're family people, they want mm-hmm. flexibility is key, reward and recognition is key, development is key. It's not always about flashy things that you're going to be bought or money even. Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot more than that, being treated like an individual. And that's not a one size fits all. That's mm-hmm. something we're still navigating through. We still don't have it completely figured out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the one key thing that we've learned is that having the right people in the right seats is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a conversation with someone the other day about, it doesn't matter if you've got someone that's your top performing consultant and they're earning the most money, they're not the right cultural fit. Unfortunately, it's not right.
And I think that's really important for people to understand, is hire slow, understand that these people fit your culture. People think I'm crazy when I say, you should get your team that they're going to be working with, their future colleagues, to interview them, sit down with them, have a coffee with them and give you feedback.
Yeah.
Because in any environment, whether it's competitive or not, whether it's competitive sales or not, actually you need to understand, does that person fit your culture? And are your existing people going to be able to get on with that individual? Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, then why are you hiring that person?
Yeah.
And if you're hiring them to shake things up, then you haven't got the right people already.
I agree with you. We have anyone that we think, and don't get me wrong, we'd just put anyone in front of our team. But mm-hmm. if we get to second stage and we're like, do you know what? It feels right.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get them to go and sit out and just spend 5 minutes, because just sitting in the back office with someone, it's probably not a full reflection on what it's going to be like. So they'll go out there and spend a bit of time with each mm-hmm. member of the team, see them all in action, kind of get a real feel mm-hmm. for it. But culture has been the biggest, when you talk about problems, I don't do problems. Chris don't do problems. Let's be honest, British people love problems, don't they?
They do.
And I am like, come with a solution. Even mm-hmm. if it's the wildest solution ever and it's ridiculous, we can wheel you back in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather you come with that than just come moaning with a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I firmly believe that's where I am today, is because I see every problem as an opportunity, is that, you know, I can make a difference. And that's how entrepreneurism works, isn't it? You find a problem, you find a solution.
Yeah.
And you go out there and make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not the people that sit there moaning and talking about it all day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's maybe sometimes where I am perceived in the wrong way. Like growing up, maybe people think I perhaps a little bit up myself or a bit arrogant, but it's because I was very tunnel vision and I thought, why are you mm-hmm. over here bitching and gassing? I'm over here just driving forward, hyper fixated and obsessed with what it is I want to do, what I want to change, what business idea I've got, what I want to earn, how I see my future.
Have you ever heard of something called Disney thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. So you're already a convert. Yeah. I'll give it to the listeners because they might not know.
Yeah.
And we might have a different concept yeah. of what it is. Because
yeah.
when someone talks to you about these things, you kind of filter it down in your own yeah. brain and for it to make sense for uh-huh. you. But the way I see it is that Disney thinking is, if we had all the money in the world, if we had all the resources in the world, how would you fix what is happening right now? So the challenge that you're facing, what would you do? And you get all sorts of wild answers. I'd fly the president of the US, maybe not, to come in and be a facilitator. I don't know, you could have all sorts of things. But the idea is that actually you can then yeah. work through, okay, well, actually the idea is that we probably need a facilitator to actually come and resolve this particular challenge. Yeah. And maybe we need some external consultancy or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's where you end up with that.
Yeah.
But I think the Disney thinking frees your mind a bit because you can get stuck in, haven't got the money, I haven't got the people. It's only me yeah. that can do this one thing.
Yeah.
And that isn't true. And if you're a founder or an owner of a business that has that problem,
mm-hmm.
you're not an owner or a founder because yeah. actually you are the single point of failure for your business.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I also think there's a lot to be said about reverse engineering as well, because when you've got a vision, you can't just steamboat. It's literally like having a speedboat, but with no driver, isn't it? Like mm-hmm. you see where you want to be, but yeah, how are you going to get there? You need to like break it down into small milestones, reverse engineer and take one small thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes Chris and I, in the beginning, we were like, we're on a mad mission and we were leaving an absolute hurricane behind us. And sometimes we still do, right? We've got an incredible team now. There is literally not one person in our team where I think you're not right.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of work on making sure we've got the right people in the right seats. There's been a little bit of moving about. I think that is the biggest thing that you need to get right in a business. There's so many organizations out there that still don't really get how important the people are. Without the people, you don't have a business. You've got no vision.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to make profit.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get them right. It's not about just having a bum on a seat. As I said to you a moment ago, Amy, you could have someone that's bringing you the most amount of money in, but if their heart's not in a good place or if they're not right culturally, mm-hmm. they're not going to be on that journey with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that we took on right in the beginning of our business, we're now 4 years on or 6 years from when Chris started it. They're not necessarily going to be the people that get you to the next phase and the next phase mm-hmm. and the next phase. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. If I took you back to your first management role, so we talked about that operations manager position that you mm-hmm. did, and you think to how you lead a team now, because I think leading and managing are two different things.
Yes.
But you think about how you're leading now. How different is that?
So I was a lot more hands-on then. Mm-hmm. I was almost a billing consultant. So I'd run my own desk and I would show them how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And I did do that up until 2 years ago. And I still, it's comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Chris are good recruiters. We're good salespeople. We've gone from like owner operator on this wild transition through to leader. And there's so much behind the scenes, so much work and personal development that it takes to go from being a manager to actually being a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you start a business, you don't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think about how hard that is. And we've recently embarked on a new journey with an impact board because we've hired some great people, but you know, we've got no one around us that's pulling us. We're pulling everyone else, if that makes sense. It's like someone that will challenge us
mm-hmm.
that will give us that level of, both of us think strategically and we both have the vision, but we're not very good implementers, we're not very good executors. So we've got this wild goal, we can reverse engineer it, but it's like putting in the blocks, the mm-hmm. roadblocks to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that you really need to make sure that you have. And just to make sure that, I don't know, sometimes we've gone through these phases of we're on a massive high and then we think, ah, do you know what? We need some more jobs in. Let's get on the phone and sell.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the right. If your business is waiting for you to be the running heartbeat, then you don't really have a business.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to get to a point where your business can fully function and operate without you being there. And we're in that kind of phase right now. We've just got to that phase, which is amazing to see.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to step out. You're the only person holding yourself back. If we looked at ourselves in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
we've been holding us back.
Mm-hmm. And that's really hard to step back
yeah.
and say,
admit,
I need to work on my business. I don't need to work in my business.
Exactly.
Because if I work on my business, then I get to do other exciting things as well. Mm-hmm. And I get to learn things. But it's so easy to just fall back into habits.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, it's like anything. If you think about how many times you might have started a health and fitness journey and you think, right, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to knock it out 3 times a week.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. And it is for a period of time. And then something happens and you can knock it down to 2 days, or it goes down to 1, or it goes down to 0, because your habit before was actually not going to the gym. Mm-hmm. Same with food. You have, I imagine most people have got 1 or 2 recipes. You've probably made them for yeah. many, many years, and you'll go back to them because it's yeah. habit, it's easy, the muscle memory's there,
yeah.
the emotion is there as well. You know what's going to happen if you ring some people and get some more jobs yeah. in. You're going to feel great about the business, yeah, you're going to get some money
instant
in.
Instant gratification, isn't it? It's that instant dopamine hit. As a entrepreneur, as a salesperson, that's how you thrive. That's what we do best. So it's alien to be like, whoa. Step the hell away. Admit you are holding your business back. Stop getting involved.
And what helped you come to that realization? How did you get there?
We hired an ops director, mm-hmm. a lady called Debbie. She's unreal. So she essentially is there to deal with the day-to-day operations of the business,
mm-hmm.
all of our people. You know, people come with challenges, problems. It's not just their job and mm-hmm. doing a great job. It's
yeah.
how are they at home? What is mm-hmm. going on? You have to take that into consideration. And the more we grew and we hit 15 heads, it was like, we can't physically have these daily conversations with people. We care,
mm-hmm.
but if we're going to be that involved in their life, and let's be honest, you have to a degree, be involved mm-hmm. with people's happiness, because that impacts their performance in the business and in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's important, which is why we hired Deb, because she's a great people person. She will put her arm around people. She nurtures them. They respect her entirely. So having her to kind of bridge that gap for us mm-hmm. has really helped, for number one. And number two, taking our head out of the sand and spending these days with our impact board and working on the kind of bigger picture stuff, the vision.
Mm-hmm.
And the vision's transformed. You know, when we okay. first put pen to paper, when we first joined forces in lockdown, we desecrated what we'd committed to,
mm-hmm.
which quite quickly we knew that we were onto something really special, because never have I ever met someone that matches my ambition, my mm-hmm. passion, my work ethic. And Chris and I have found each other in that.
Mm-hmm.
To do what we've done in the last 4 years is unreal, but to keep growing from that, is you can't keep doing what you've been doing, basically. Mm-hmm. You have to level up. And so we've grown 800%, and our market in the recruitment industry, they're in an 18% decline for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting around our peers in conferences and things, and we're like just thinking, are we lucky?
Mm-hmm.
Is there luck? Do you create your own luck?
Mm-hmm.
Because we drown out the noise. And when we interview potential new people and they're like, oh yeah, it's really tough, we're like, no, you're not for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's tough, but you know what, in every tough situation you will find an opportunity. It's mm-hmm. the way you flip the coin.
Mm-hmm. And I think if anything, if you were a business owner through the pandemic, you will have learned that, because mm-hmm. you had to pivot consistently.
Massively.
And every time you did pivot, you were okay for a little bit. And then suddenly actually something else would happen. You'd have to pivot again. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who has weathered that storm has a resilience
yeah.
that perhaps people don't appreciate. And even if their business didn't work out for whatever reason during that time, it was such a hard period of time. But actually, if you don't recognize that those people who did have a business during that time were able to come out of it with strength and resilience, I think is something that we need to think about, whether it's individuals who own businesses, whether it's individuals that came out of that pandemic wanting to just permanently work from home. And I think that's a real, for me, this debate has been going on for too long. Should people work from home? Should people work in an office? And I'm kind of like, well, where does the work get done? Does the work get done at home? Does the work get done in the office? And what we're not, we've become very, as individuals, a lot of individuals have become very insular. And I care about me and what happens to me, but not about everybody else. And actually, as a business owner, you have to care about what happens to everybody else. So you have to think about, actually, when we've got a new starter, which I know you have very recently got a new starter. When we've got a new starter, how are they going to learn how we do things around here if they don't see the modelled behaviour from other people when we're together? How does that, I guess, really work for your organisation? Because you talked about flexibility, you talked about understanding individuals. How does that work?
I'm really passionate about this topic. I think cut the noise, do whatever works for your business. And you are absolutely right. We have grown our business on driving high standards, ensuring that service is premium. You know, service is one of those things you can't touch it, you can't smell it, you can only really feel it, and you're only as good as the last impression you've made on someone, be that a candidate or a client. And we've actually, I set the girls a challenge, we've just exceeded 200 five-star reviews, which is really unheard of.
Fantastic.
Google reviews,
that's amazing.
For recruiters to get reviews anyway, good reviews is hard to come by. You know, our industry just doesn't. But we've just managed to get over the 200 mark, which is saying a lot about the service. You know, our values are made up of the word service. So there's no getting away from that. For us, it's like, whatever needs to be done, let's do it. If a client asks you for something which is a little bit outside the box, it's not a no, it's not a we don't do that or we've never done that. It's a we'll find a way. You know, within reason, we'll find a way to make it work. We want to make like doing business together easy and hassle free. And I think that's so important, to just take a step back and think, you know, when was the last time I went somewhere and received a really, really good service? You find that you receive bad service, and you probably talk about that more, don't you? So for us, that part of the jigsaw is so vital. And someone that's inducted from home is never going to pick up on that, because they're not listening to daily conversations. We have a positioning statement in our business, which you've probably heard and seen. It's the Mixos way. And what that means is we do things the right way. You know, we look after the people, the money will take care of itself. We don't cut corners. We're not fee slashers either. We stand by what we are. And if it means walking away from business, then that's what we do, because sometimes all business isn't good business. We have specific set processes and the way that we do things, which I think is really important for any business owner listening to this. Without processes in your business, you're never going to be able to grow or better, potentially never be able to sell, because you need them embedded within your business and have those blueprinted. So to a degree, when someone comes in, they will sit with not just the top performer, but they'll sit with everyone in the team and do shadowing and listening. And there's a lot to be said for just sitting next to someone and hearing a simple conversation, because when you're at home or you're having a tough time, you're not just going to pick up the phone. But if you sit next to someone, you'd say, do you know, I'm really struggling with this today. Or I don't know how you guys at Mixos do that. You just wouldn't do that when you're at home, would you? And I think I'm all for do what suits you and suits your business. And long term, I think flexibility is key. So we have a work from home Wednesday if someone needs to leave early because of a washing machine or a dog appointment or a debt call. We're all human. You need to do it. We can't fit into this like 9 to 5 box, everything that we need to do as human beings. But in terms of inducting and making sure that someone has a really good start, we always come in on a Wednesday. Probably Debbie, I think it was Debbie this week that came in with our new starter, Rebecca, just to make sure that Rebecca felt comfortable. You know, it's not, and if it was maybe more transactional, but we're not transactional recruiters. It's all built around relationships. Mm-hmm. How can you learn that by sitting behind your laptop or your PC?
Mm-hmm.
You need to be in and amongst it. So I do feel really passionate about mm-hmm. that. We've literally built our business on standard service and making sure that what our client wants is what they get and mm-hmm. what our candidate wants is what they get as well.
Mm-hmm. So thinking about challenges, because you don't like the word problem, so we'll go with challenges. Since you started Mixos mm-hmm. Group, what would you say would be the biggest challenge that you've faced?
People. Mm-hmm. Ironically, I run a recruitment business. biggest challenge. I think we made a few hires that weren't great hires, and actually on paper, perfect fit for the bill.
Mm.
But it's not always about that. And this mm-hmm. is how we see recruitment through a different lens entirely, because we, like, 90% of our workforce is homegrown talent.
Mm-hmm.
So we've taken people with no preconceived ideas, no bad habits. And unfortunately, the recruitment industry pre-pandemic was so different to what it is now.
Mm.
And you could get away with transactional recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot more about CV flinging, but now it's about building relationships, having emotional intelligence, being able to, and this is why AI will only impact for the better what we mm-hmm. do as recruiters. You will never remove the human part of it. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible. You can't rely on AI to make decisions. There are people that we place, even last week we placed this most amazing guy, and the client didn't want to see him because on paper, he didn't fit the bill, what they mm-hmm. had in their head. Mm-hmm. And we have a process which we blueprinted whereby we select the best talent and, mm-hmm. and the client sees them basically.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do any send a CV, review it, come back to us, because the time that could take mm-hmm. could be a week. The yeah. candidate's then gone.
Yeah.
We're in a completely different market post-pandemic. So they were booked in anyway, but their thought process was, I don't really want to see them. Mm. You know, they don't look like I think they should on paper. Absolutely blew them away.
Mm-hmm.
Not an obvious choice, but they were the right person, the right culture fit. They had the right mm-hmm. work ethics. They were moldable. They had, to a degree, some of the skill. The rest of it was, you know, they're able to train. So I would say, going back to your question, the biggest challenge has been people, because we've got excited and thought, oh my goodness, we're on to a winner here. People are approaching us from our competition. They are experienced. They've got a good reputation. They're mm-hmm. credible. They come in and their standards are nowhere near the Mixos standards. And trying to rewire the brain of someone that's ingrained already like that, you are fighting a losing battle.
But I'm hitting my billing targets, so why do I need to follow your process? Because I'm hitting my billing targets. I'm doing, you know, I'm making you money. I don't really understand why I need to
most
do that.
Most of the time they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making money. And, you know, one thing that I love, and I shared this with my team the other day, there's been two incidences in the last 2 weeks where I said to brand new clients, why have you chosen Mixos? Like, why are we mm-hmm. why are we where we are?
Yeah.
And they said, both of them, in two different ways, because you said no to us. And I said, what do you mean? And one of the ladies said, well, I sent you a job description. We'd been meeting at networking events mm-hmm. and chatting. And I'd sent you a job description and you said, no, sorry, I can't just send you CVs. I need to come down. Mm-hmm. I need to do a full brief. I need to meet the line manager. I need to understand about your culture. And she said, that for me just struck a chord. And I thought, now I know what I'm getting for my money.
Mm-hmm.
You said no, because most agencies would have got excited and thought, oh my God, job, mm-hmm. job spec, quick, go find some CVs, mm-hmm. throw them over, quick, first to the, you know, it's like mm-hmm. a race to the bottom. First one to get the CVs over because they're using five other agencies. So 9 times out of 10, we have exclusive partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we have that is because we have a 100-day guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
So if for any reason it doesn't work out, we are like really putting our neck on the line.
Mm-hmm.
What business do you know that would say, you've got 3 months to make sure it's right. And mm-hmm. if it's not, here's all of your money back. There mm-hmm. is no quibble at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we can put our money where our mouth is and be that bold, because we mm-hmm. know behind the scenes we're following a process and we're taking an extra level of detail that no other recruiter out there does. So again, all of those things, you'd never learn that from home, working mm-hmm. behind your laptop at home, would you?
No.
It's like seeing people do it. But that, to me, I love sharing that story with my team now about mm-hmm. we said no to that client, and they therefore wanted to work with us because they really valued the approach we take and that we genuinely do care and we are consultative.
So on the flip side of that then, what do you think has been the success that sticks, other than that? Obviously, we talked about a challenge, which has changed into success. But if you thought about a big success that really sticks with you.
A big success. Good question. We've now got an incredible team and it's taken a while to get here. Mm-hmm. But I am under no false illusions. Chris and I could have a lifestyle business tomorrow and make good money and probably work, I don't know, 10 till 2 and go on holiday when we wanted. But we want more than that. We want to have a bigger purpose. We want to give back. As I said to you, most of our team are homegrown talent. Mm-hmm. Debbie aside, all of the consultants and one lady that's on maternity leave, they all came from different, an array of backgrounds, but they just had those kind of core behaviours that we know that are right for our business. So getting the right people in the right seats now have really helped us excel over the last 18 months to 2 years. And we've honestly, we've come to a place I never ever thought I'd be. We just won the Milton Keynes Small and Medium Business Award.
Congratulations.
Which was really, really exciting. You know, we do lots locally in the community. Mm-hmm. We've grown our brand significantly. We rebranded last year to Mixos. Mm-hmm. And we just, everywhere we go, everyone knows us and appreciates the work we do. Mm-hmm. Not only for candidates and clients, but also in the local community too. We do a lot. We give back. We work a lot with charities, but not just financially and kind of throwing money at them. We do a lot for the YMCA and helping, you know, young people that have perhaps lost their way a little bit, come back on track. I do personally do mentoring with lots of young people, like one-to-one mentoring. We do lots with Harry's Rainbow as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's that whole bigger thing in that, look, we've grown by 800%. So if we're talking, you know, what are you most proud of? It's that. Mm-hmm. But you don't get that without having the right people.
Absolutely.
And that's what I appreciate and I'm grateful for, and that we've been resilient. And there's times as a business owner where you think, oh my God, is it me? Is it us? I look at Chris and say, is it us?
Are we the mad ones here?
We are bad. We are literally lunatics. We're lunatics. But I don't think there's one business owner out there that isn't a lunatic, right? You are passionate, excitable, your standards are up here. Mm-hmm. No one ever really meets your standards, do they? Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, they don't. Mm-hmm. Because if they did, they would be doing it themselves and they wouldn't work for someone else. Mm-hmm. And you need to see the best in that. And my motto is be an 8 out of 10 every day. Mm-hmm. You don't do 10 tens. This 10 10 is a false illusion. Nobody, unless you're a robot, can be 10 10 every single day. Mm-hmm. But if you come as a solid 8 out of 10, I did it through my whole upbringing with all of the dancing and everything. Be a consistent 8 out of 10. It's better than being 10, 10 one day, 4 out of 10 the next day. And you're like this all the time.
Mm-hmm. Consistency gives you the quality. And that, I think, is the most important thing that I try and say to people is about consistency. Because if your clients know what to expect and they get that level of service every single time, they know what to expect. Consistency. Yeah. They will continue using you. Yeah. I like going to the gym that I go to because I have consistency in the level of classes. No matter when they're run, no matter who's running them, there is consistency. And that's what you're looking for. People think it is this excellent 5-star quality. Yes, that's great and lovely. But again, it's consistency of expectation. Yeah. So if I expect this is going to happen, that's what should happen.
You have nailed it. Chris and I say all the time, the general, that will do is the kind of general results I hear from a lot. That will do. Oh, that's okay. We're like, no, that won't do. And I think if you just do the right thing and you have good attention to care and you're already ahead of the rest. I speak to my little boy about this all the time. I have two stepchildren as well. And I'm always saying to them, look, take that extra level of care. Do what you say you're going to do. Do you know how many people don't do what they say they're going to do? That's a rule number one for us. When we employ, if you say you're going to do something, do it. If you can't do it, cool, manage expectations, but don't mm-hmm. just say you'll do it and then the deadline comes and goes and you haven't done it. Mm-hmm. And there's the same that I push back on my little boy all the time and my two stepchildren, like, you will already be head and shoulders above the general population just by doing what you say you're going to do and having good standards and having a good moral high ground. Absolutely. It's not rocket science, is it?
It's not. It's not. And I think a lot of people, again, think it's confusing and don't understand how to think through those things.
Yeah.
But again, consistency. We've got, I don't know, Ethan, who owns Great Gelato in Stony Stratford. When he's serving an ice cream, he has to have the same quality level of ice cream every single time he serves that ice cream. That's the consistency of service, isn't it? Yeah. And it's the same in any business. Consistency is key. So that brings us towards the end. And the final thing I always ask people is, if you could give one bit of advice to somebody who's either thinking about starting a business or who perhaps already has a business, what do you think is the one? And I realize there's probably 10 of, there's probably a whole book of advice, but if you could think about it in any walk of life, what do you think that would be?
Mine's more of a mindset thing, is to go for it. There's never ever going to be a good time, whether it's to start a business, whether it's to rebrand, start another product line, start to employ people. Go for it, because tomorrow might never come. And if you wait for that opportunity, the opportunity might never manifest. You have to create the opportunity yourself, drown out the noise, because I've had people around me and some of my most closest family and friends tell me, no, don't do this. Don't do it. It's too risky. Drown out the noise, because they're projecting their fears onto you. And if you really believe in something and you're passionate, you'll find a way. It may not be a smooth ride. You know, there's been so many times when Chris and I have had our heads so far in the weeds, you know, when it's not going so well and you're like, just pluck your head out. As you said before, Amy, sometimes you have to work on the business rather than in it. I know that sounds really strange. And also to know your worth as well. You know, if you're good enough to start your own business in your trade and your area of expertise, like, stand by yourself. Don't undercut your prices. We've really stayed strong and we've turned business away that hasn't matched us morally and ethically, kind of in alignment with our business. So stay true to that. Don't kind of act in desperation and take anything, because it's really hard to build back up from that. Once you go there, you can never bring yourself back.
I really like something that Jamie Edwards, who I know that you work with as a coach, as a business coach, he at your networking event earlier in the year where I first met you, he was talking about, I think it's four or five frogs and they're all on lily pads. And if one of them decides to jump off, how many are still on the lily pad? And there was a lot of different answers coming from the audience. And it was a great question, because if you really think about it, it is a bit of a trick question. But let's say it's four and one of them decides to jump off the lily pad. So if we think about it in a business context, one person decides they're going to start a business. How many frogs are still on the lily pad? And the answer is four. Because to decide to make a business or start a business is not doing a business. It's not starting. Actually deciding and going. It's the going that you're actually trying to get into. And as we said before, there's never a good time. And actually, just start now.
Yeah, listen, you'll lose people along the way, because there will be people that are like, God, I wish I could do that. Or God, they're absolute lunatics. You will. It's like with anything, we spoke about personal branding, like just putting that first post out, you like get sweaty. Like, oh my God, what if people don't like it? What if they think I'm weird? And you just got it. Whatever you do, this is probably my one piece of, if you said to me right now with a gun to my head, what advice would you give to anyone? It would be consistent in a thing that you know will move the dial in your business. So if that is posting three times a week for PR, do it and don't deviate. If that is taking one day out of your business a week to strategically work on your business, make that happen. If that is, I need to continuously look for talent, like my kind of business, spend 4 hours a week looking for talent and interviewing new people. Even if you don't have a vacancy, you need to have that that kind of open-eyed approach. So whatever's going to move the dial in your business, consistently take those steps every day.
Thank you, Gemma. I think we'll end it on that brilliant note there. Thank you for listening to the What's Your Problem podcast. I think my ask for everybody is, if you've got feedback, please let me know in the comments or contact me directly. We are live on YouTube, Spotify, and you can also follow along on Instagram stories now, which I've just remembered that Gemma's told me I need to post 3 times a week to make sure my PR goes up. So help by liking and sharing. And that's the best thing you can do for any of your small business owners that you know, is to like and share and comment on their posts, whatever platform they're on. Support each other and enjoy the ride.